The battle's real, right? We live it every day. It is difficult. I mean, have you ever wondered, like, why life is difficult? Should it really be this difficult? Should certain things in our life, issues that we struggle with in day in, day out, year in, year out, it seems like the same struggles just hang on us. The battle is real. And see, the struggle is real. The war within is real. And the question becomes, are we winning the battle? You know, Job asked the same question thousands of years ago in Job chapter 7, verse 1. He says, why is life so hard? And that's part of what this series is about, the battles. Why is life so difficult? Why is it so hard at times for us to change, for us to leave certain habits behind, to get rid of certain issues that we've been struggling with for days or for years? Why is it so difficult? What is it about this battle? Why is life so difficult? And I want to kind of get into the weeds today of why life is so difficult. So this message here is mostly bad news, kind of lay the foundation here. The bad news, we'll get into some of the good news, but in the weeks to come, we're going to be focusing on the good news. We're going to be focusing on the process that God takes us through for true life change. But let's talk about why life is so hard. And we know it as followers of Jesus. We know that sin has wreaked havoc on this world, that everything is broken. Nothing works perfectly. Nothing works well. And we're all broken, right? Sin has damaged everything. And we like to think that we're normal, don't we? We like to, you know, scroll through Facebook and think, my family's just normal and there's some messed up stuff going on. We think we're normal, but nobody's normal, right? You're not okay. I'm not okay. We're all not okay. We're not normal. We like to think we're normal. There's really no such thing as normal. The only normal person to walk this earth was Jesus. He was the only normal person to walk this earth. And he was confronted with all kinds of difficulties, with pain, with rejection, with depression, with a lack of food, and all that he went through, and even death. And yet he never suffered like emotional disturbance, right? He was healthy through and through, no matter what he was facing. He's the only person that was normal. And he's the model, right? That's what we want to be like. We want to be like Jesus. There's no such thing as normal except for Jesus. So why is life so difficult? Well, let me give you the problem, and I got it in a mathematical equation, so to speak. If you go to my next slide. So here is the problem. The problem is this, that we have a nature, and we have this sinful nature that is very much focused on self, what we want, what we need. We have this nature, the sin nature, that drives a lot of what we do and what we want. And then we add into that, we all have needs. God created us with needs that need to be met. And when those aren't met, or they're met in the wrong way, it causes problems. We have needs that sometimes go unmet, and that leads into pain. We have pain because needs aren't met. It leads into pain, and then ends in we have emotional issues that we are damaged and we are not functioning well, and it leads our life in a destructive manner. So this is kind of the formula that we have, this nature, the sin nature that is in us, that we have needs that need to be met, and they're not getting met, and then it leads to pain in our life, and all that builds up, and then we have this emotional disturbance that none of us are normal. We all have problems, okay? We all have problems. It doesn't matter what kind of family you came from, what's going on. We all go through this right here. Nobody is free from it. It is unavoidable. It's unescapable. And we all struggle with this. And this is why we struggle to change. And it's wreaked havoc on our lives. All right, so let's talk about each one of these as we jump into it, just give a little bit more detail to it. First, the nature, our sin nature, this sin nature, this old man, this old nature, the Bible calls even our flesh. It calls our flesh. It's not talking about our physical flesh, but just this old nature inside of us. This is part of our problem. This is the first part of the formula, and we're all born this way, and we struggle that we don't learn to be selfish. We're just born selfish. Are you guys with me? Like, we know as kids, watching our kids grow up, that they didn't have to learn selfishness. They just came by it naturally, right? They wanted them to be first above anybody else. Their needs to be met first. We come by this naturally. You watch a kid, you see it. And we see this all throughout the scriptures. Let me give you one verse here just to kind of push this point forward. Romans chapter 1, verse 25. It says, they exchanged the truth of God about God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is praised forever. So here's the thing. We have a habit of exchanging the truth about God for a lie. We have a habit of exchanging truths for lies, whether it's a truth about God for a lie, a truth about ourselves for a lie, a truth about other people for a lie, we have a habit of believing lies. This is part of our problem. We have a tendency to believe lies. We have a tendency to exchange the truth and believe lies. And if this wasn't bad enough that we were selfish, you know, we're kind of born this way. The scriptures makes it clear that from this is where we land, but it continues to go on. We believe lies. We distort truth. We think wicked thoughts. If you go to this text, it talks about all this. And then we behave in sinful ways. I mean, this is the pattern of this nature that is inside of us. And Matt touched on it last week. Jeremiah 17:9 says the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? We have a heart problem, and it's the way we were born. It's the nature that is inside of us, and that's what is part of the battle that we face on a daily basis. The second thing is we have needs. God created us with certain needs, right? God created man, and he said it's not good for man to be alone, so he created Eve, right? Man has a need for relationship, for significant relationships in our lives. All people are created with a need for significant relationships. And so God created us with certain needs. And when those don't get met, we struggle, and a lot of times we have problems. Just look at Matthew 6:8. He says, Jesus talking about prayer here, says, for your Father knows what you need. He created us with certain needs. And when our needs don't get met, we run into problems. Now, we have a need to be loved. We have a need to belong. We have a need for meaningful relationships. We have a need to be unconditionally accepted. We have a need to be valued. We have a need to be respected. And the list goes on and on that we have a list of needs. And every day we want those needs to be met. But our needs aren't always met. And when they're not met, a lot of times we respond badly because of the sinful nature, which causes more problem. So this is our problem. We have this old nature, then we have needs. And between the two of those, we have a tremendous focus on self. We have a tremendous focus on ourselves. Like, we think we are the center of the universe. And we spend a lot of time fighting this old nature and trying to get our needs met. And because of the old nature, we try to get our needs met in unhealthy ways. This is the battle that we deal with. And then leads us to a third part. We're now ready for the third stage of this equation, and that is pain. Pain, which leads to emotional disturbance. So pain is any threat to my needs being met. Any threat to my needs being met. Now, here's the thing. No parent is perfect, and no need can be met at every moment. So we go with needs not being met. And this happens not just parenting as a little child is being parented, but it goes on not just from our homes, but to our neighborhoods, to our schools, to our playgrounds, to sporting events, to work, to the mall, to the media. Every area of our life, countless places, we have needs that go unmet. And that leads us to emotional issues. None of us are normal. And it's an unbeatable combination. There's no way out of this equation. This is part of life. You can't shelter any one person from this. It happens no matter what. It's inescapable. And this is why we have problems. This is why everybody has problems. Doesn't matter how good your home life was, how good a parent you had, we all run into this same equation that causes us problems. And when we're trying to fix the problem, we're trying to fix the pain because of our sin nature, a lot of times we're trying to do that in unhealthy ways, which just makes the problem worse. And so therefore, we all have a problem. And we're trying to cope. We're trying to cope with our needs not being met. We're trying to cope with the pain that we feel. And that sin nature, again, just pushing us along in unhealthy ways. And this is our problem. And we are our worst, biggest enemy. And we lie to ourselves, and we are our biggest problem, okay? And you guys all know the phrase, we have met the enemy, and he is us. And that's where we live pretty much daily, okay? And Paul gives us a real good picture of this in Romans chapter 7. And even as a follower of Jesus, he was struggling with this same thing. And it's very interesting. This becomes where the battle is. And so look at Romans chapter 7, starting verse 14. He says, for we know that the law is spiritual, and I am carnal, sold under sin. He's talking about this sinful nature. He says, the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. He's like, we've got a sin problem. And when you look at this text, and specifically the verses that we're looking at, Paul uses the word I very frequently. He uses it about 26 times in 12 verses. He uses the word me 7 times. He uses the word my 4 times and myself once. Meaning the focus is on me. I have an I problem. You have an I problem. We all have the same problem. It becomes very common among all of us. And he keeps going on. Notice the confusion as he goes on writing this. He says, for what am I doing? I do not understand. For what I want to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. Anybody ever been there? We've all been there, right? The very thing we want to do. You're like, hey, today, when I get up today, this morning, man, this is a new day. When I encounter that person, this is what I'm going to do. Man, I'm going to love them. I'm going to treat them right. And the very thing I want to do, we end up not doing. And the very thing we didn't want to do, we ended up doing. This is where Paul found him. This is the battle that we all face. He says, what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good. He's going, I've got this problem. Man, this is very confusing. The very thing I want to do, I end up not doing. And the very thing I don't want to do, I end up doing. He goes, this is messed up. He's like, I'm not normal. He keeps going. He says, but now it is no longer I who do it, but the sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, meaning that old nature, right, that old man, nothing good dwells, for to will is present with me, but how to perform? What is good that I do not find? For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will not to do, that I practice. You hear the frustration and what he's struggling with? And we can identify because we all struggle with this in one area or another. None of us are free from this. We all have our areas. We struggle with this. He says, now if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but the sin that dwells in me. And then he keeps going here. He says, I find that a law, that evil is present with me. The one who wills to do good, for I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. He's saying here, I'm in a battle and I'm losing. Has anybody ever been there? And there's certain battles that we've been fighting for years, and I feel like we've been losing for years. And I wonder, can we go through a process? And I think we can. We can go through a process where God frees us from those struggles. And maybe 6 months from now, maybe a year from now, the things we struggle with today could be relics of the past. But Paul here is very clear. He's in a battle and he's struggling and he's losing. And in verse 24, the first part of it, he says this. He says, oh, wretched man that I am. Man, it's like he's trapped. He's condemned, wretched. He is worn out. His energy is lost. He's losing the battle. And he's out of energy to even keep on fighting. This is where he's at as he's writing this. This is what he has experienced. Oh, wretched man that I am. He's worn out, he's exhausted, he's out of energy from fighting this battle, and he's losing. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, there are a couple other factors I need to mention that just kind of add like icing to the cake, so to speak, but not in a good way. The first one is, another reason why it's so hard to change is because we've been dealing with these issues for so long. Because we've had these issues for so long. A lot of these started when we were young. Maybe we were in middle school or high school. Maybe it was when we were younger, maybe a little bit older. And we've gone through this equation ending with pain and trying to fix our emotional issues. And it's just gotten worse and worse. And we've been living a certain way with certain habits. And we've been living that way so long, it's just become second nature in a sense to just live that way. We've been dealing with these problems so long, we've become so familiar with them. And so, and although they're bad, they're self-destructive, there's a certain safety we feel with them. And there's a certain comfortability that they bring to us. It's kind of like the children of Israel. They were in slavery and bondage in Egypt. And God says, I'm going to take you out of there. And then we'd rather stay here because we know where our meals are coming from. It's safe. We know where we're going to sleep. If God takes us out into the wilderness, we don't know where we're going to get food from. We don't know where we're going to sleep. We don't know what tomorrow brings. At least the slavery was safe. And a lot of times we're slave to sin. We're slave to these issues that we're dealing with. But we know that the slavery is safe. We know what tomorrow is going to look like. We know the next day is going to look like. There's a safety. There's a comfortability with the issues that we have and how we've been dealing with them. And so that just adds, makes it more difficult to this process of change because we've had them so long, but we're at least comfortable with them. A second thing that adds to the difficulty here is it's hard to change because we kind of identify with our problems. That becomes our identity. If we're not careful, it just becomes our identity. That it's no longer, I have a problem with this, but this is just part of me. It's part of who I am. And we just accept it as part of our identity. Man, we've been struggling with it so long, it's just who I am. And so we need to separate those, but a lot of times, again, we've just kind of, this is who I am. This is what I have. This is me. These are my problems. And we just tend to identify with them, becomes part of our identity. That makes it more difficult. And a third reason here it's hard to change is because my sin and my faults have a payoff. Here's the thing. We don't like what we're doing. We know we're doing wrong. But these behaviors that we have some sort of payoff to them. Whether you recognize it or not, there is a payoff. We don't do anything without there being a payoff. Let me understand the payoff. Let me make sure we understand the payoff. So sometimes as parents, we yell at our kids, not because we want to, but because they didn't listen the first time, the second time, or the third time. And we know if we yell, they will finally move, right? You call them down for dinner, and they don't listen. Hey, dinner's ready. You guys come get something to eat. They don't listen. You do it a second time, they don't come. Third time, you yell it, and what happens? They come. Do you like yelling at your kids? No. Why do we do it? There's a payoff. They finally listen. Now, granted, there's another way to do that without yelling, but yelling is the easiest, quickest way. There's a payoff. What I'm saying is there's a payoff. Have you ever had a child throw a temper tantrum? And they throw the temper tantrum, you give them what they want, they stop crying, they're happy, there's a payoff. Have you ever stepped over the child, left the room when they were throwing a temper tantrum? What they'll do is they'll stop crying immediately, because they were faking it to start with, and they will get up, walk into the room where you're at, throw themselves down in front of you, and start crying again. Why do they do that? Because they like throwing themselves on the ground and crying like a baby? No. They've learned there's a payoff. And if you reward that behavior, they will do it again and again and again because there's a payoff. When you stop rewarding that behavior, they end up stop doing it because there's no payoff and they're not gonna do it. Here's the thing. Every bad behavior that we have has some sort of payoff with it, whether we realize it or not. And we keep doing it because of the payoff. That's one of the reasons we keep doing it. So we've got to recognize that there's a payoff. What is the payoff? How do we deal with that? Now, granted, the payoff is different things for different situations for different people. The payoff might be masking the pain. It might be a cover up for fear that we're holding on to. It might be an excuse to fail, compensation for guilt. There's lots of things that we have a payoff, and that's why we do it. So let's go back to Romans chapter 7, verse 24 and 25. Here to the solution. We've got this battle, but what is the solution? And Paul goes on here. He says, oh, wretched man that I am. And notice he says, who will deliver me? Not what will deliver me, but who will deliver me? And here's the first key to change in our life is not what will deliver me. It's not a seminar. It's not a book. It's not a technique. It's a person. It's Jesus. He says, who will deliver me from this body of death? And then he goes in, and this is where Paul begins to change or express how his change happened. He says, I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then with my mind, I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. And if you jump into Romans chapter 8, he expresses even more fully how he found freedom. But the first step to freedom is found in Jesus. And although we can't get away from the war within, we don't have to be defeated by it. And that's what Paul shows us in Romans 7 and Romans 8. He describes this war within and how he was losing, but then makes a shift from the end of Romans 7 into Romans 8 and then how he won the war. Never escaped it stays, but he wasn't defeated by it anymore. He learned how to win the war. He learned how to win the war within. And that's what we need to do. We need to learn how to win the war within. So let's talk about this for a few minutes. How do we win this war within? And this is what we're going to unpack over the next several weeks in more detail. How do we win this war within? Well, the first one, kind of, we're going to be in Ephesians chapter 4 for this, for these few points that I have as we wrap up and kind of set the stage for where we're going over the next couple weeks. So I invite you guys to come back and continue with it in this series with us. So here's some keys to personal change. The first one, it requires learning truth. It requires learning truth. Change requires that we learn truth. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 21, it says, when you heard about Christ and you were taught in him accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. It takes truth to change. Jesus even said this in John chapter 8, verse 32. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He is the truth. But change requires truth. It's the foundation for change. You've got to face the truth. We've got to face the truth about us. We've got to face the truth about God. We've got to face the truth about our situation. If we don't face the truth, it's hard to change. Nothing changes until you start with this foundation of truth underneath you. And so that's one of the keys to, and the reason why this is because behind every self-defeating behavior is a lie that we believe. Behind every self-defeating behavior that we have, there is a lie that we believe. And we need to identify that lie and replace it with the truth in order to bring about the change in our lives. Number two, change requires making choices. We have to make a choice to change. I wish it was all up to God. I wish he would do all the work for us. But there is his part and there is our part. We can't do it without him, and he can't do it without us. Now, I find it funny that sometimes I feel like we use prayer as a means of opting out of doing our part. It's kind of like code words sometimes, not always, but sometimes. It's like I talk to somebody like, yeah, I've got this big problem, and you know, we talk about all the things they need to do, some steps of faith they need to take because there's God's part and there's our part. And at the end of the conversation, well, what we're going to do, we're going to pray about it. We're just going to pray about it. Which sometimes is code word for meaning, I'm not doing anything. And sometimes we're waiting on God to change us when really I think God is waiting on us to take some steps of faith where he meets us in that step of faith. And so we can get stuck and just, I don't wanna make any choices. I'm not gonna take any steps of faith. And there's maybe some good reasons for that. We're afraid we're gonna fail again. But again, faith pleases God. It's impossible to please God without faith. And he works through our steps of faith. That's why we need to pray and ask God, what do I need to do? And we've gotta make some decisions and do something. I remember reading the story where Moses is standing before the Red Sea and he's got the Egyptian army on the other side and like, what should we do? And in the Living Bible, love it, he hits the water. He says, let's get moving. Let's do something. Let's move. It wasn't about let's not pray about it anymore. It's time to move. And sometimes we get stuck. We're just praying about it, which means we're not doing anything. Sometimes, listen to me, sometimes we need to stop praying about it and do what God has been telling us to do. And if we don't do that, we're never going to get to that next step. It takes a step of faith. So change requires making a choice. I'm not saying those choices are easy. Sometimes they're difficult. They require some effort on our part. It requires some faith on our part. But it requires a choice. It requires a step of faith. Notice what he says here. He says, you were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self. See, there's something we have to do. We have to put off the old man. We've got to put off the old self. We've got to put on the new self. There is our part and there is God's part. In Philippians, Paul wrote it like this: God works in as you work out. God works in your salvation as you work out your salvation. There's God's part and there's our part. God works in changing the inside. We're supposed to work on the outside, meaning we take steps of faith to match what God is doing on the inside. There is a choice we have to make. We've got to choose to change. Many times we just refuse to choose to change. Number three. Change requires new thinking. Because we need this truth, we've got to change our thinking. And he says here in verse 23, to be made new in the attitude of your minds. Change requires new thoughts. And we can't just kick old thoughts out. It's hard to get an old thought out. The way you do it is you get a new thought in. It's the principle of replacement. Instead of, you ever thought about, try not to think about something. Somebody gives you a word or gives you an idea. Try to stop thinking about, if you're thinking on that word or that thought, you can't stop thinking about it. You just simply replace it with a better thought. That's what makes reading the scriptures so important. That's what makes memorizing them or meditating on them is you're replacing old thoughts with better thoughts. You're replacing them with God's thoughts. You've got to change your thinking. Change requires new thinking. And number four, change requires authentic community. Here's what we need. We need authentic community. Notice what he says here. Therefore, each of us must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. Here's the thing. We need authentic, meaningful relationships. Change doesn't happen all by ourselves. Gross things grow in the dark. When we keep something hidden in our life and not tell anybody else, gross things grow in the dark. Now, I'm not saying go broadcast it on social media. I'm not saying tell a ton of people. This is where small groups become important. This is our hope. This is one of our goals with our small groups. We get into a small group. There may be 10, maybe 15 people there, 8, 10, 15 people there. From those small groups, hopefully we are developing some really close relationships with maybe one, two, or three of those people in there that you could share maybe something more deep, maybe share an issue or something that you're struggling with. Maybe sharing it with the whole group would be a bad idea. But maybe as you're going to your life group and developing these relationships, there's maybe one or two people and they're like, you know what? I feel like I could really trust this person, and you could share with that person something you're struggling with. They could help pray for you and encourage you. Not counsel you, but pray for you and encourage you. And this is what we need. We need authentic community. We spend so much time trying to cover up our weaknesses, cover up our fears, cover up our sin, that we don't tell the truth with at least one person so that we could become free. Our church is a part of Harvest Network International. I'm one of the elders of the group, and so at times I interview people that are wanting to come into the network and be an ordained minister, and I was interviewing this young man. As we were going through the conversation, I had questions I was supposed to ask him, and as we were going there, I just had this thought. I think it was a God thing. I thought, I need to ask him about pornography. Sorry, man, I don't know where that came from. I need to ask him about pornography. As we're going through this, and I asked him, I said, Have you ever, you know, do you struggle at all with pornography? And he said, he got quiet and he said, yeah. He goes, I have. I said, okay. He goes, but it was in the past. It was in the past and I don't have a struggle with it anymore. Okay, oh, great. Well, that's wonderful. That's in the past. How far in the past? Well, 3 weeks. Right. Gotcha. Okay. And have you told anybody? He goes, yeah, I told somebody. Okay, who did you tell? It's like this, it's somebody obviously you know, it's accountability partner, maybe your pastor. No, I told this person that I knew I would never see again. And so I did tell somebody. I said, okay, so we got a couple problems here. 3 weeks is not the past. And telling somebody that you're never gonna see again is not what authentic relationships really is about in the healing process. I said, you need to go tell your pastor. I don't care whether you tell the lead pastor or the youth pastor or the, you know, whoever's over you, you need to go tell one of your pastors. and then you need to work with them on making sure that you just stay, get free and stay free. But gross things grow in the dark. We like to hold them to ourselves. As long as we hold it to ourselves, gross things grow in the dark. When we expose them to somebody that we can trust, somebody that can help us, somebody that can pray for us, encourage us, we find healing. That's part of the healing process. Change requires authentic relationships. This is where we're going over the next several weeks. The question is, do we want to become more free as this year goes on, or do we want to continue to struggle with the same old things? I don't know about you, but I don't want to continue to struggle with the same old things. I want to be making progress. I want to be freer today than I was yesterday or last week or last month or last year. And I want to be freer tomorrow and next week and next month and next year than I am right now. But it requires a process that we go through with God in order to be free. We've got to face the battle with God's help, with God's power, and allow him to work in us the changes that are needed. Will you stand with me this morning?